The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Weekly Connect. This is the programme where you get the chance to talk about the issues that matter to you. And we talk about the stories that are in the news relating to RNIB or indeed sight loss generally. And we get a chance to cover those as well. Coming up this week, we find out why a new smart house has been designed for blind and partially sighted people in Liverpool. We're also looking forward to hearing about a new art class that's taking place for blind people in Nottingham. And we'll be hearing from our own Jill Barkley, who joins us once again this week to talk about one of her favourite things. That's fashion. That's coming up on The Weekly Connect this week.
The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Well, we start this week with a serious story, and that is the Charity Commission and Ofsted, who've launched an investigation into RNIB over safeguarding concerns at a children's home. The inquiry, which you might have read about in the papers, was triggered by serious concerns about the oversight and management of the Pairs Centre for Specialist Learning. That's a residential setting for children and young people in Coventry, run by the subsidiary of RNIB called RNIB Charity. Now, following the announcement of the investigation, RNIB Chief Executive Sally Harvey took the decision to resign from her post. The chair of RNIB is Eleanor Southwood, and she spoke to me to tell us what has gone on at the charity. Difficult day, I guess, for RNIB. Tell us what's happened here. What's gone wrong?
So, a couple of weeks ago, we received a notification from Ofsted, who regulate children's services. And the notification was in relation to the children's home at Pairs. So you might be aware that we run both a children's home and a school at Pairs. Notification is with regard to the children's home. The notification was a proposal to cancel our registration, which would mean we were no longer able to provide the service. We have until the 13th of April to demonstrate to Ofsted some pretty substantial changes and improvements in order to meet their expectations. And to share with you the contents of that notification, the notification talks about a failure, a management failure to comply with expected standards, and also to respond in an adequate way to concerns that Ofsted had previously raised. So this is, it is the most serious regulatory action that Ofsted can take, and we are taking this extremely seriously. It's absolutely clear that something has gone very wrong here, and we will do everything we need to do in order to put that right. So we take full responsibility for what has happened and also for making sure that the children are safe and receiving the support that they need, and the families too, and staff, and making sure that we put in place processes so that this cannot happen again.
Now, I think many will praise you for coming forward and admitting that there's been a failure here. But as you say yourself, this is something that had already been raised with RNIB. And it clearly seems from what all the Charity Commission report today, and even from what RNIB has said itself, that this was something that RNIB did not deal with appropriately.
I absolutely recognise that we have something has gone wrong here. We have let down the children in our care, and I am profoundly sorry that that has happened. And I'm profoundly sorry that we have clearly not done what we should have done in order to respond to the concerns that Ofsted raised. I absolutely accept that, and we take full responsibility for that and for putting things right. So on the ground, we've taken some swift management action. I've asked one of our senior directors to lead specifically on this work with our regulators, and also made sure that staff at Pairs are properly supported. So we've brought in some external expertise to make sure that everything we're doing is quality controlled and that it is fit for purpose and in line with the very latest care standards.
There are reports in the media, Ellie, that there was a sexually abusive practice that had gone on here. This is a report actually in the Guardian that took place at this centre. Can you speak about that and the allegations that have been made here?
On the 2nd of March, we filed a serious incident report with the Charity Commission, and that related to a very specific incident, which was an incident of an allegation of sexual potential abusive practice. That allegation has been looked at by all the relevant agencies, including the police, and they have confirmed that they will not be taking any further action.
Now, of course, all of this news comes on the heels of RNIB in the news around a huge financial loss in the last year or so. We've heard about the figure of £12.6 million that the charity has been in deficit to. There was also a story recently about RNIB being the subject of hacking as a result of the online shop activities. I mean, it's not been a good year for RNIB, has it?
It's been a really challenging year, and our financial situation has been something that the team here, our executive and all of our staff, I know, have worked really, really hard to turn around. And those plans are in place and beginning to take us to where we need to get to. The online incidents, I guess, it illustrates that charities are not immune from, an increase in that kind of cyber crime. And we are absolutely taking seriously the need to protect the data of everybody who we come into contact with. We take that very, very seriously.
But of course, some might argue that, you know, with RNIB facing financial difficulties in recent years, that £12.6 million I mentioned, a reported loss in the accounts last year. And then in addition to that, 23 staff being made redundant from what just one department of the charity. Is RNIB, is it, you know, able to meet our compliance? Have we enough staff to do the job, essentially?
It's really important that we make sure we have the right staff in the right places to be able to, you know, provide confidence to the families who entrust children to our care primarily, and of course to our regulators. We are looking at exactly what needs to be in place at PAIRS in the first instance, but of course, across all our regulated services, making sure that we are meeting all of those obligations and providing the best possible service to those young people. We went through a substantial restructure around this time last year. And one of the reasons why I want to conduct, and the board wants to conduct, a full independent review into what's happened here at PAIRS is to make sure that we're clear about how in the future we can make sure that the staffing is appropriate, that everybody has the proper training in order to do what they need to do.
And the Charity Commission have welcomed that in their report that has come out. The Pearce Centre, of course, as you say yourself, is a school and children's home for young people who are blind and partially sighted and also have multiple disabilities or complex needs. What do you say to the parents and the staff who work there and also the children who are at that school to reassure them going forward that Pearce Centre is a safe environment to be in?
The safety of the children and the confidence that our families have in the service is our absolute priority. I am personally very, very sorry that we're in situation and committed to doing everything that we need to do to get us out of it. And so I want everybody involved to know that we take this very seriously, that we take full responsibility, and that we are putting in place everything that we can in order to resolve the immediate situation, but also to make sure that it can never happen again.
And of course, then amongst all of this, it might also be easy to miss another element of this story, which is that Sally Harvey, the chief executive of RNIB, has resigned. Can you talk to us about the reasons why Sally's decided to leave?
Following the notification from Ofsted, Sally has decided to step down as our chief executive. I really want to thank her for the 9 years of service that she's given to RNIB and her dedication over all of those years and her commitment to supporting blind and partially sighted people, and to wish her the best of luck in the future.
What happens to the leadership of RNIB at this point?
Yeah, great question. So obviously my priority is to make sure we have the right leadership for the organisation. So the board met yesterday and we will put in place plans to bring in an interim chief executive as soon as is feasible. The executive team are working really, really hard And they also have significant roles to, you know, to get on with it as well. Like I say, I've asked Elliot, who's one of our most senior directors, to take a lead on these issues with related to PAIRS, related to the Charity Commission. But there are significant other roles to do, of course, because the reason why RNIB is needed is as much about the 250 people who today will have been told that they're losing some or all of their sight. And those vital services that we provide to those people and that support, that's needed more than ever. And that's why we have to be the best organisation we can be. So this is a hugely difficult time for us. And I really, you know, the staff and volunteers who are working so hard to support people affected by sight loss, you know, their work is so essential and must continue even at this really difficult time.
But of course, one other aspect of need at RNIB is money and fundraising, clearly. You know, what do you say to people who are putting their hands in their pockets for RNIB, who are considering leaving legacies for RNIB? They read this story like this. They may think, this isn't for me. What do you say to them?
I completely understand how this news may make it difficult for some people to have confidence and trust in RNIB. And I am completely committed to rebuilding that trust. I have personally spoken to many of our major donors today and our the most high-profile supporters, because the way that we are as an organisation and our you know, approach, which is to be proactive, to be transparent, is all about reaching out to those people and explaining to them what's happened, but also reassuring them that we are taking action, we are doing everything that we can to put this right, and that the board is absolutely serious about making sure we can have a strong future, you know, a strong future which is all about providing support to those people who need us.
Ellie Southwood, Chair of RNIB, thank you for giving us your time.
Thank you.
Now, let's talk fashion on The Weekly Connect. It's not a subject that I have to say I am particularly good at, but thankfully I know someone who is. And we've had this particular person on the show a few times. Joe Barclay is back with us. Hello.
Hello.
Now, the reason I wanted you here was because, you know, we talk with you a lot of the time on the programme, but we don't really talk to you. And I know you've got your own show, and I know you get a chance to talk about lots of things with other people, but you're always the interviewer, and I think it's time for you to be the interviewee.
Oh my goodness, will you be kind with me?
Of course I will, of course I will, I always am. But the reason I wanted to bring you on was because I know you're a big lover of fashion, and you know, one thing that a lot of people talk about with you is fashion and how you are able to make yourself look the way you do. A lot of people who don't know you, and this is people who've talked to me, say, but she can't be blind because look at how good her makeup is. Or look at how good she is at fashion. And people are always kind of amazed at how you can do it. And I have to say, even as a visually impaired person myself, I'm amazed because, you know, I basically buy things that are navy or black, and that's my uniform. I know that those will always work together, but I'm always a bit bemused as to how you can do the whole colour thing, how you can keep up with the fashions, how you know how your makeup is right. So come on, spill the secrets. First of all, are you blind?
No, it's all been a big fake for the last 14 years. No, Stephen, that's really, really kind of you to say. And yes, I do get people asking me, you know, does your husband do your makeup? You know, who does your makeup? Like, I can afford a makeup artist to come in every morning at 6 o'clock to do. No, it's one of those things that, you know, I grew up in a household where there was me, my sister, and my mum, and my little brother was a good bit younger than us, but we were three women kind of that were alone a lot of the time. You know, my stepfather was abroad a lot. And, you know, my mum was a makeup artist. So, you know, she trained from a very young age. She went down and trained in London with Helena Rubinstein, who was a huge makeup house in those days. I mean, still around now, but, you know, very prestigious. And, you know, she was into doing models on the catwalk, you know, doing their makeup, doing fashion shoot makeup, that kind of thing. So makeup was always in the house. I mean, I remember being as young as 4 years old and playing with my mum's makeup. And, you know, sometimes I'd sit and I'd ask her to do my makeup for me, and I'd put on a tutu and prance about like a precocious horror.
Did you have a hairbrush anytime you used it as a microphone?
Oh, yeah, of course. But, you know, it was just something that was always second nature in our house, because my mum used to say to us, when you feel your worst, look your best. And it was always a way of trying to kind of deflect from a bad situation or something that we were maybe a bit miserable about. Go out, look your best, feel your most confident, because we did as girls feel confident with our makeup on and, you know, with our fashionable clothes on or whatever. And I think for me and my sister, I mean, my sister's makeup is phenomenal as well. I mean, she's really good with makeup, and she probably gets to be a bit more creative than I do because she can see. But
do you share tips with each other? Do you sort of talk about the latest of trends? Because I guess that's my thing, is how you keep up with the trends.
Well, I don't tend to look for trends with my sister. My sister lives abroad, so it's very difficult in that kind of respect. Plus, she's living in Dubai, where, you know, the makeup trends over there can change, you know, maybe not with the times here. Mm. So I tend to, you know, I'm very lucky. I've got Alexandra Lucas that comes on my show. Now, she used to work for the benefit counter in you know, one of her stores, her high street stores. And she is so into her makeup. I have Emily Davison, you know, that keeps on top of makeup. Now, these girls have a bit of partial sight, so they know, you know, colours and things like that. But see, to be honest, my way of you know, keeping up to date is going into the actual counters in the likes of Fraser's or your John Lewis or, you know, the big stores that have lots of makeup counters, and saying to the girls, I go to the Chanel counter, mm-hmm. and the girls all know me there, and I'll say to them, right, I finished that eyeshadow palette, what colours are in now? And they'll tell me, and don't get me wrong, I'm not a kind of slave to fashion when it comes to makeup trends, because there's some things that don't suit you. They don't suit your skin type or your colouring or your age. You know, purple can be very unattractive on somebody my age's eyes, because it can make them look quite red and make them look a bit sore. So you've got to be careful about what colour eyes you have, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, they keep me right. The girls keep me right with what the colours are. In terms of fashion, well, I suppose like any girl, I kind of keep up to date with wee fashion segments on telly, or I'll get my husband to tell me what's, you know, going on in the shops, or friends, if I'm going out, you know, I'll say, you know, what's in at the moment? But I think you tend to hear these things.
So here's the thing, because when you're talking to your husband, mm-hmm. you know, there's that joke that goes around, does my bum look big in this?
Yes.
When you ask your husband that question, do you say to him, right, look, forget every other guy on the planet who has to say, no, darling, tell me the truth. Is that important to you, that he's honest with you to tell you how you look in certain clothes?
Do you know, when we first started seeing each other and we go out shopping together, he was brilliant at picking colours and picking things that were he just knew would suit me. And I told him what I liked and what I wanted and what colours I liked. Now, it doesn't mean to say that they're instantly going to look good on you. You can go in and, you know, there was times where I tried on a top that, you know, was so tight it gave me about 8 boobs. do you know what I mean? It's just going to, or, you know, you've got something that completely cuts you in two, or yeah. makes your bottom look particularly big. And he would always say, you look lovely. And I would be standing there, you know, with bits hanging out of bits that shouldn't be hanging out, saying, are you visually impaired yourself? Because I cannot understand why you would think that suited me when I can't see myself. And I know that is so ill-fitting. And obviously, like any other, you know, partner, he didn't want to offend me. Now he knows how much that I need the truth and how much I appreciate it. Now, he would never say, oh my goodness, your bum looks huge in that. But what he would say is, nah, it doesn't suit you, babe.
Mm.
And, you know, I know that that's right, that's not for me. And he knows that, I can try something on, and if he says, that's nice, I'm like, nope, I'm not taking it. Unless you say it's stunning.
You can tell. Yes. You can just tell by the tone of his voice.
I can tell by the tone of his voice.
Yeah.
And then he'll say to me, look, it's really nice, but it's not stunning. So he is very honest with me, and I'm very lucky in that kind of respect. And he's great with things like, you know, when I'm doing my eyeliner, you know, the lines at the top of my eye, I do with a kind of paintbrush and a kind of gel eyeliner. And, you know, it's quite difficult. But if I do get the tiniest little lump, he'll be the first to go and get a cotton bud and say, right, I'm just going to wipe that little smudge off there.
Right.
So he's really, really good in that respect. But that takes time. That takes time because, you know, he needed to know what he was looking for. If I had just met my husband and went up to him in a club and said, you know, do my top lines look okay on my eyes? He would have turned around and said, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's all about, you know, trusting people.
That's really interesting to hear. And listen, thank you so much for coming in to talk about it, because I know it's a personal thing, you know, and it's, I know you enjoy talking about it, but it still is personal to you. So I appreciate you doing that. And it's been lovely having you in.
Thank you, Stephen.
Now, imagine a world where you can try out the latest technology in a setting that is as close to your own home as possible. Well, that's exactly what St Vincent's School in Liverpool have done. Along with partners, they've built a smart house which showcases assistive technology and how it can support people with visual impairments to live more independently. Danielle Colcombe from RNIB went along to see the house for herself and to share her experience with us.
Hi, I'm Dr. Simon Bowers. I'm a general practitioner and the chair of Liverpool CCG.
Dr. John Patterson, I'm the principal at St Vincent's School with Visually Impaired.
So we're here at St Vincent's School today. Do one of you want to tell me why we're here?
Okay. We are opening the Smart House, which is a wonderful space with a range of technologies and access equipment that helps visually impaired and other disability groups basically access life and independence. I think it would be a fair snapshot of what we're opening today.
So where did the idea come from, this idea of a smart house?
Well, we've been at Liverpool CCG with our partners. We've had this technology available for patients in Liverpool, both prescribable by their doctor, and also there's a commercial offer where people can buy it for relatives. And it's a wonderful catalogue of stuff, but it's just stuff on a page if you don't do something with it. And so we set up almost like a B&Q mock-up of a house and set some of the equipment up, and that's been done the rounds of conferences, and it was at Liverpool Museum for a bit, and we found that people who visited that could really start to envisage how this technology could really support and change their lives. Everything from the visually impaired children that John looks after here at St Vincent's, all the way through to patients with dementia who need to be kept safe, people who might lose the keys, things like that. There's all these kind of really, really clever, geeky technologies that can really improve things. And this has given us an opportunity to actually build it all into an actual house with a proper front door and a working toilet and bedrooms and stuff, so that we can bring people here to show them exactly what the potential of this is. But more importantly, the kind of thing that makes this a win-win for everybody is that the school can use it to help the children to develop new ideas to support people with visual impairments, both in Liverpool and all over the world.
So the hope that this is a pilot for a much bigger project?
Well, you know, it's a pilot in the sense that there's a lot of technology and engaging children who are visually impaired within science, technology, engineering and maths and design would make this place, yeah, a nice little, you drop a pebble in the pond and the ripples go beyond. Yes, it will lead to bigger things, which I think this city can share locally, nationally and internationally as a model of best practice.
So what kind of things can we expect to find in the house?
Well, do you know what? I like the can opener myself. That's my favourite. You've got to really come and see. It's a whole home, if you imagine a home. What do I need in this home to make me independent? What can I have in this home to help me more? From everything from the bedroom to the bathroom, really. That's such an extensive list.
It is, and I suppose the simple things from talking recipe books, talking microwaves, a key ring that a patient with dementia can press a button on when they realise they've gone wandering and they don't know where they are, fingerprint technology on door locks in case you forget your keys, all the way through to advanced sensor technology for beds so that we can detect when people are having a fit, we can detect if people have got out of bed in the middle of the night, we can detect if maybe they've wet the bed in the middle of the night, all of that stuff, that's all there now. And the really interesting thing about it is that none of this is 2018 sexy technology. This stuff's been around for ages. Mm. This is about getting it applied to people's lives. You can only imagine what the smart house would look like in 4 or 5 years' time when we're all living in virtual reality or whatever comes next that we don't know. But if we've got the infrastructure to be able to take advantage of that, that's the first step, and that's what we've done really well in Liverpool. Now we want our children, in the case of St Vincent's, or our residents, in case of the Smart House more generally, to come and play with these things and give us the ideas for what's next.
So we talk about implementing this. How far away are we from seeing this kind of home being available to anyone who's visually impaired?
Well, in terms of the offer, it's there now in Liverpool. I think what we've concentrated on has been older, frail people with mobility issues and dementia, because they're the things that are really, really impacting on the NHS currently. I think this gives us that chance to now specialise a little bit, because it's St Vincent's, but also to continue that development. So I just can't wait for John's kids to get in here and start playing and start feeding us the ideas for what we can do with technology next.
Totally agree with you on that. I love your reflection on that.
In your presentation, you talked a lot about collaboration. Can you tell me who's been involved in the project?
Well, from our side, it's obviously it's the CCG, but from my side, it's our children and our staff. The building you're in now, Bradbury House, was actually supported by Bradbury. We're going to be teaching the next generation of teachers of the visually impaired. We just won the right to do that from the Department for Education with Liverpool John Moores University. So, you know, there are wide collaborations in our children, our staff, our universities, our CCG. Anybody who's involved in wanting to secure better outcomes for disability groups has been involved.
Yeah, and in terms of the kind of knowledge of the gizmos and getting it in, we work with a load of partners, but we're working currently with an organisation called HFT, who've made this happen for us kind of in partnership with the school. So we're very grateful to them for all the support they've given us.
And so it's a really exciting project, and I can't wait to go and have a look at it myself. If anyone else is interested in finding out more information, how can they do that? And can you come on their own tour?
They can come on the tour. I mean, seeing as their building is in the grounds of St Vincent's, your quickest route is contact St Vincent's office.
St Vincent's. Brilliant. Thank you very much.
I'm Sarah Weston, Innovation Manager for HFT, and HFT is a national charity that supports adults with learning disabilities.
And where are we at the moment?
We are in the St Vincent Smart House. So that's a collaborative project between HFT, Liverpool Clinical Commissioning Group, and St Vincent School to bring together all of our different expertise in visual impairment, personalised technology or assistive technology, and healthcare to bring together on a project to create a house which is full of technology that can support people to live more independently or do things for themselves.
Fantastic. And can you just describe where we are and how it all came together?
Yeah, so right now we're in the kitchen, and in the kitchen there's lots of different things that can help people. So we've got bump-ons on all of the cupboards, so you know which side of the cupboard we're on. We've got the famous one-cup kettle, which is a kettle that will dispense just enough boiling water to make one cup of tea, so you don't need to worry about filling kettles or lifting boiling water. We have some remote switches, which allow people to do control particular kitchen gadgets, such as blenders or toasters or microwaves from further away. So the switch can sit next to you rather than being, you know, if you can't reach up. We've got a talking microwave, which might work quite well on your audio. So,
door open, door close, start, incorrect key.
Sorry.
Press again to cancel. Cancel.
What else do we want to do in here? We also use a lot of talking photo albums. So they are photo albums where you can put a picture on each page and then record a message on each page. So we don't use them as photo albums. We use them as memory books. We use them as prompting devices for recipes, so people know how to follow a recipe step by step. For some people with learning disabilities, we use them for simple journeys, so catching the bus to work or something along those lines.
Brilliant.
Okay.
So we've moved into the bedroom. Can you just describe to me what we can find in here?
Absolutely. So the bedroom, well, first of all, one thing to say about the whole house is it's decorated in colours and textures that mean it's pretty easy to see which room you're in and as you're moving from room to room. So the door frame's different colours to the walls, the plug sockets are different colours, so they stand out so people can spot them and see them easily. In the bedroom, we've got some automatic blinds, which can be controlled by remote control. We've got a series of sensors on the bed. There are bed occupancy sensors, so perhaps you might know if somebody's got out of bed at night or not gone back in and therefore might need a bit of extra help. We have epilepsy sensors. We have something called a death guard, which links into the fire alarm, which makes the pillow vibrate at night. So if you can't hear the fire alarm, your pillow will vibrate and you'll know when to get up. We've got lots of remote switches. That's probably that one, yeah. We have a bubble machine. And the reason we have a bubble machine is mostly because everybody likes bubbles, but actually what we use it for, this is particularly works quite well with people with learning disabilities, is that we use it as a sort of a learning device. So teach somebody to use a switch and they realise that when they press a switch something happens, it's cause and effect. So therefore if they understand it for this concept, then you can start using it with other things where the effect is less obvious, so they could use it for their lights or their television or their fan or something along those lines. We've got some Alexas in here, which we've been using. Alexa, turn off the fan.
I'm having trouble connecting to the internet.
She's having trouble connecting to the internet. But she did hear me.
Which is what's important.
Yes. We've got some touch-sensitive lights so that you don't need to turn on and off with a touch. And we've got the sensors for the bed in here as well.
Brilliant. What's this very wonderfully coloured pillow thing?
It's a sensory cushion, so it's very, very soft, and it also flashes and changes colour. And what we use that for is people who perhaps find particular environments stressful, and it's about responding to people's sensory needs. So we have a sort of sensory checklist, which where we sort of talk to people about the things that they like, things they don't like, and what makes them relax, what makes them stressed. And so sometimes things like this can just really help people to relax and that sort of thing.
Fantastic. So we now find ourselves in the living room. Yep. So what can we see here?
In the living room, one of the things we use a lot of is our big button telephone. It's a very simple piece of technology, but it literally has much bigger buttons for people to be able to see and for people with limited dexterity. And it also has a picture dialing system. So we can just press the picture or use your pen friend to identify the picture of the person, and then it will just dial that person. It's effectively speed dial, but it's a little bit more fun than that. Again, we've got some remote switches here, so these two turn off the television and the DVD player. We've got more alerts here, so we've got a talking watch, which again, does this one talk? Or is this this isn't the talking watch. This is the panic button with a fall detector in it. That's that one. So this is a watch which allows people to call for help or will alert if they fall over. We've got panic buttons. We've got an easy to use remote control, which just has 7 simple buttons on it rather than a whole host of them, which just again makes it a bit easier for people. Over here, we have some easy to use mobile phones. So this one just has a very simple 4-button dialing system. This one, you can actually have these with pictures on, or also this is actually a phone as well, people's names, or you can get them in Braille. We have a Mind Me device, which is a GPS locator, which allows people to call for support if they're out and they're lost and they don't know where they are, and people can log into the back end of the app and see where they are. We use a lot of these communication points.
Can I phone my mum, please?
I'd like a drink, please.
And they can be the difference between people being able to ask for drinks or not, and actually being sat there waiting for someone to offer you a drink. And that's quite liberating. If you can't ask somebody for a drink yourself, or you can't make one for yourself, it's really quite liberating just to have that one button with that message to be able to do that.
When can we expect the first visually impaired people to live in an environment like this?
There will already be people with visual impairments living in environments like this, but the nice thing about this project is that we can reach people at school and educate them about it before they leave school, so they can be better prepared to go off into the world and do the things they want to do, I think.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for showing me around. It's been a pleasure.
You're very welcome.
Elliot, great. And what do you think of this new house?
Yeah, I think it's impossible because although my visual impairment isn't very that severe, some of the technology here is useful for normal things, and it just makes life easier for other people with visual impairments and blind and that.
Is there any particular gadgets that you like, you're interested in?
Well, I'm not sure because I don't know the names of some of them, but some of them in, like, especially the bedroom and then kitchen, they're really.
So that's going to make life easier for you, is it?
Yeah, especially, kitchen is more important for me, but overall they're very useful. So.
Brilliant, thank you very much. What's your name?
Marcia.
Marcia?
Yes.
And is there any particular gadgets that you found interesting?
There's quite a few, actually, especially the... No, that one.
Oh, safe sip, sorry.
the safe sip?
Yeah, especially the safe sip, as, like, a lot of the things here can give somebody independence that needs it or that particularly wants it without having to have somebody there all the time with them.
The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Smart technology is going to change people's lives.
Definitely.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Thanks for that, Danielle. That is Danielle Colcombe there from RNIB going along to see the Smart House in Liverpool. Now let's get right up to date with what's happening at RNIB Connect in the northeast of England. Lindsay Coyle joins me now on the line to tell us the latest. Thanks for being here, Lindsay.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you here. I know you've got lots to tell us what's happening in the northeast with RNIB Connect.
So I just thought I'd come and give you a bit of a flavour of what events and groups are happening up in the northeast, just so people have a bit more of an idea of what's going on and how they can get involved if they wish to. So to look back, I guess, retrospectively, that a couple of weeks ago, at the end of March, we had a big social event across the northeast. It was in Newcastle, and it was essentially to look at what events people would like over the next 12 months. So obviously Connect is about local planning and positive society, people doing what's important to them. So we had lots of ideas, anything from a day trip to Whitby to a music event, a barbecue, tea afternoons, that kind of thing. So that event was really just to kind of get some ideas about what events people would like to see. But as part of that, we kind of did a quiz, and a few people may have gone off for a drink afterwards, potentially, maybe, just to kind of meet each other, have a bit of kind of time to sort of chat socially. So that's kind of the first event that I've been involved in across the northeast, where we were getting people together from across the region. Other things have happened prior to that. There's been a weekend in Windermere at the hotel, Windermere Manor, again for Connect members across the northeast to kind of go out on trips, do different activities, and again as ways of bringing people together. So there's been a couple of kind of, like, I guess, big region-wide events, but what I thought I'd also do was touch on some of the local groups that are also starting to set up in the northeast as well, just to give a flavour of more local things, because attending big events isn't everybody's thing. It's walking into a room full of lots of new people that you've not met before. So there's lots of other Connect groups that are setting up. So on the 11th of April, we have the second meeting of the Tees Valley Connect group. So that essentially, geographically speaking, is the south bit of the northeast, if that makes sense. It's the south half of the northeast region. So that will be at the Middlesbrough office from 11 o'clock on the 11th of April. And that is just the second meeting of that group. And the venue will be rotated across the Tees kind of region, if you like. So again, that's to meet up, have a bit of a chat, discuss what the group would like to do. But it's just a way of kind of setting up a social group for the Tees area of the northeast, which kind of, from feedback, people have said actually there's not an awful lot happening in the south. So lots of things go on in Newcastle, but the south of the region often there's a bit less happening. So that's partly to address that. And then on the 19th of April, at 12:30, we have a get-together in Thornaby Pavilion. But that's a sporting venue, so anybody who's interested, I think this session is going to be curling. So anybody wants to have a go at curling, in the past they've done kind of archery, indoor bowls, there's a cafe in there as well. So that's the 19th of April at 12:30 at Thornaby Pavilion. Again, that's kind of for the south of the region, really. But anybody who's kind of in or around the area can come along and meet people. But again, that the Thornaby group is quite new, and they're looking at perhaps doing other things, such as perhaps organising theatre trips or meals out somewhere. So, again, that's a really new group that's just setting up as well. And the last thing I want to quickly mention, which for me I think is actually really, really exciting, is we've got lots of younger people involved in Connect in the North East. So on the 21st of April, which is a Saturday, we have our first kind of Young Persons Connect group meeting at 12 o'clock at the Dolphin Centre in Darlington. Again, that's just for young people to kind of get together and socialise with other young people. That will be the very, very first meeting of that group. So I think the potential of that's quite exciting. Aside from that, we also have we're also looking at developing another group in Hartlepool, and we also have a group in North Tyneside called Parkside People that meet in our Walls End office the last Tuesday of the month from 11 or 12. So there's lots of things happening that are already happening across the North East, and lots of new groups being formed as well. So anybody who wants to find out a bit more about things that are already going on, or might be interested in setting up a group where they live, or getting involved in something if they're in another area, what I would suggest is they kind of contact us. The easiest way of doing it is northeast@rnib.org.uk, and then we can send you updates on what we're doing and what's happening where, because there is a lot happening. We obviously also have the North East Connect Facebook group as well, and that's becoming really, really active. So we're trying to promote and share events as much as possible. So it's just called RNIB Connect North East. So do look us up and join the group, and then that's another way that we can keep you all updated on what's happening. So that's it from me for the North East, for now at least.
Thanks, Lindsay. We'll look forward to hearing more from you soon. This is the Weekly Connect. Now, finally this week, getting out of the house can be the biggest challenge a person with sight loss can face. And that's why groups exist around the country to help people find new ways to enjoy themselves in spite of their lack of vision. RNIB's Hannah Cave went along to visit an art class set up for blind people in Nottingham by local group My Sight Nottingham.
Probably beginning of April through to mid-May is what my ideal choice of time. You get a 6-week slot.
Okay.
And these guys are going to be exhibiting their work.
Oh, great, okay.
And that is because this is a serious project. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's not fun, it's fun.
Yeah.
But what we're trying to do as a group is we're trying to overcome the idea that because you're visually impaired and you can't see the way you used to see, your art is going to get poorer.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm saying your art is going to get different, and it may even get better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I want you to paint what you see.
Yeah.
Having said that, it's becoming increasingly obvious to me that people have memory of what they saw, and that is feeding in as well.
Yeah.
So this project is called Ways of Seeing, and this is the Newark Art Group who are producing, hopefully eventually, a good, I would prefer an A4 size, an A2 size canvas.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them have balked at that a little and said, it's too big for me. So we may go down to A3, but they're going to be at least A3 up to A4.
Yeah.
And if somebody, we're going to look at the space, but if somebody is really capable, I may even go quite big, with one of them.
Yeah.
It may well be Paul or Eva, because they work in a very bold way.
Okay.
So that's the principle of what we're doing.
Yeah.
Guys, I forgot about this because I may be moving well, Eileen, but the brain's going. So this is Hannah from RNIB.
Hello.
And I've known about this for quite a while. And I had forgotten that she's coming today because I think RNIB are doing something similar at the moment, aren't you?
Yes. RNIB have the How I See campaign, which is raising awareness for different eye conditions. And also, you might have seen a few videos with the different canes and everything that people use. So when we became aware of this project, we thought it tied in quite nicely with our How I See campaign. So that's the reason that I'm here today.
Thank you. So what happened today was that Brian came in quite early and brought in a piece of work he's been working on and asked me to tell him what I thought of it. And I've been thinking that each week, as we start, I think it would be good to have what's called a crit session or a critique. Now, it sounds a little bit formal. It sounds a bit scary, actually. But unless you have that, I think that for you guys who are trying to do something quite serious here, if you're enjoying taking your work home, some of you, to work on, I think you won't know quite where to go when you get home sometimes. You'll be sort of thinking, is that enough? Have I done enough? Is that what was being asked of me? The thing to be aware of, and I was very aware of this, was that, of course, I'm critiquing it as somebody with sight. So our conversation had to take the form of, did you mean to leave those gaps? No. Is that because you can't see where the gaps are? Well, it's all fuzzy. So my instruction then to Brian was, you've got to paint the fuzziness. So you can't just leave a blank bit of canvas because you can't see there. You have to try to, we have to have the whole thing covered by paint or materials. So filling the gaps is quite important because at the end of the day, this is a proper piece of work to go in a gallery. If there are gaps, they have to be painted in. They can't just be left on the surface. And that is just one of those arty things that it looks unfinished. You know, and that's just me being sort of art teachery. You know, if you do leave a gap, it looks unfinished. You have to paint the gap.
Shirley, I was just looking at the detail in your picture. It's beautiful.
Bring a bit of altering,
you're going to mix it. Have you always been into art?
Would you be able to share this one with...
For pleasure,
yeah.
More than anything.
Well,
I used to belong to the Newark Art
Group.
Because when I retired, that's what I wanted to do. Yeah. It was something I'd wanted to do in the past and never really had the time. But then I went... My eye condition was the result of an operation that went wrong.
Okay.
So it was sudden.
Yeah.
Couple of years ago, I got a massive infection, so now I've got a damaged retina, which is why I can't see out of that eye.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, the art group said, oh, you can come back.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, no, there's so many of them so good there, I should just feel as if I was, inadequate now to do it. And also it meant I had to walk up the road in the dark.
Yeah.
That's what I was finding difficult. It was all very new to me.
Yeah.
It's a condition that I didn't grow into.
Yeah,
like the rest of these people.
Yeah.
And so that was it as far as I was concerned. Mm-hmm. And then a friend said to me, one of the volunteers of my site said to me, well, why don't you come to my site?
Yeah.
So I went to my site and then found that they had started this art group.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, great.
Yeah.
So I came, first time I came, I sat there and painted a vase of flowers, which I've always done.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of thing I've always liked doing.
Yeah.
So now nobody's going to, well, I say nobody's going to criticise, but we don't this morning.
Informally.
But no, I mean, this is how I enjoy coming.
Yeah.
For 2 hours I can sit and... And do it like I used to,
and it's hopefully shown you can still do it.
Yeah,
and it's beautiful.
Same paint box and the same brushes. And
it's amazing. The detail in your picture is beautiful as well.
You see, wildlife is my thing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I know Jeannie wanted me to build up on things, and I thought, well, we could actually perhaps have a 3D kingfisher or something like that, and a branch. I mean, that's going to be a log eventually along the bottom there. But how we do this, I'm not quite sure. I've tried to get things going off into there, like the bluebells and the swift and the primroses. But, I mean, is a little bit of light I get in down that side.
Yeah.
But it has to be a bright sunny day.
Yeah. And is that how it is? Is it quite broken light?
It is really. I mean, I can't really see anything there now. If I wave my hand there is a slight movement, but yes, it's sort of broken. We were trying to throw something down there. But,
Oh, no, it's
beautiful. You see, when you move your head, you accommodate all that.
Yeah.
You know, when the swifts are flying over, I don't suddenly see half the swift.
Yeah, you move your head with it, don't you? Yeah. Perhaps you could do a moving piece of art.
Yeah, no, it's maybe. Beautiful.
And really great that you're still doing it and the detail's still amazing.
Well, this is it. And this is, gave me, the first week I came. Well, that's it. I bought the bit today, so I didn't know whether... That's what I did.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It wasn't the first week. That was two sessions, I think, I did that.
Yeah.
And I went home and I was really chuffed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because I'd done something again.
These are actual moulding art pictures.
Yeah.
I've had a difficult. Paul, are you sticking with the big bright colours?
Yes.
Are you sticking with the big colours on this one again?
Yes.
Yeah.
I like the bright colours.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this now. So
I presume does contrast help you more, does it?
Yes. Yeah. I just like to play about with different colours.
We're going to use a ghost.
Okay, it doesn't. Okay, might not look. Well, but I just like to do like splashes of colour and put a little.
Yeah. So quite like abstract, because I imagine that's probably how, when you say looking into the distance and everything's blurry, it's quite abstract, isn't it?
Yeah. Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I know it's not really ideal.
And I love the little figure that you've drawn on the other one.
Yeah.
It's quite a good representation of the nystagmus as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's...
Did you see, really?
It looks like there's something wrong with it, but...
So we're going to pretend you've moved your head a bit.
But to you, it means something, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's great. Thank you. I'll let you get back to you.
No problem, that's fine. No problem.
To your bold colours.
I'll find something a bit more delicate than a big pair of scissors.
Carol, are you finding it easier? Yeah. You know how you said you were going to paint and then maybe put a curtain over it? Do you find that easier than trying to paint it with the curtain already there, if you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of paint how you know it should look, as you said.
Yeah,
I think... I took it for the colours, it's me.
Because I'm turning my head and looking at this with my left eye, and I've got something to copy off now, I can't get, like Brian was saying, I can't get the sizes right.
Yeah.
When I did this last time, to me that... looked like I remembered having seen this.
Yeah.
But now, having the photo, I sent my sister-in-law to take a photo of it for me and blow it up for me.
Yeah.
That is just nonsense. I know that now. So now I'm trying to go over the top of it.
Okay.
Have all the brushes gone from the middle? They're here.
Oh.
And try and make...
Here we go.
I'm actually measuring it like that with my fingers and trying to make it, because I can see there's a big...
And you can just...
I know it's a tree,
mm-hmm.
but I can't, in my head, I can't make it
across like that.
The right size.
Yeah.
So I thought if I had something to copy on,
like a point of reference.
Yeah, because I've never painted before. I just was at my... I only lost my sight a year ago. So up until then... I'd never painted since I was at school years ago, and I could never do it. And when I could see, and when they said, "Do you want to come and join that?" I said, "Well, I can't paint when I could see. How can I paint now?"
Yeah.
And I thought, "Well, yeah, just go and give it a go. You never know." And I do enjoy doing it now.
Yeah. No, that's good. It's a good release, isn't it?
It is.
Painting as well.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, because it doesn't.
Here,
as everybody says, now it doesn't really matter, just do it.
Yeah.
If it's wrong, you can paint over it.
Yeah.
Which is what I'm doing. So, but certainly having that, and I can put my hand on it and get an idea of size, is making it. And I was saying to Jeannie that when I'm travelling about, I have to make things into something in my head. If I can see something in a field, and to me it's church shape, well, that's a church. It may not be. It could be an animal silo or something like that, animal feet. But I have to make it make sense.
Yeah, to you, yeah. So,
yeah.
So in some ways you're kind of using memory a little bit.
I work a lot on memory.
Yeah.
Everything I do. Everybody said, well, people have actually said to me, are you sure you're blind?
Once again,
because
you can
do so and so. You don't look blind and you can do so and so. I said, yes, because I know, or I hope, that's where I know it is from memory.
Yeah.
Take me somewhere different
and then you
and I'm lost.
Yeah.
But because in my own home and places I'm used to going in, once I've got the idea of where things are. Yes, I can walk about, and it must look like I can see what I'm doing, but I don't, because if somebody put something in front of me, I'd walk straight into it.
Yeah, yeah. It's getting knowing what you're used to and adapting for yourself, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a big learning curve.
Yeah,
from actually being able to see to then overnight just gone.
Just gone. Yeah, yeah. Imagine. Yeah.
Colour for your
but I just think, well, I've just got to get on with it.
And trying things that you've never done before.
It is. I'm doing all sorts of things now that I never would have done before.
Yeah.
And enjoying doing them.
Yeah. That's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Eileen, are you having a go at trying to draw the shapes that you see? Okay. The patterns that you see.
When you look at water, have you got any pictures of water in here?
No.
Probably not, because it's swamp now. I have got a lot of book, hang on.
The closer I get, the less I can see.
Right, okay.
I didn't bring another book.
So,
let's have a look at that.
So I've noticed you looking up a few times. Is it you're looking in the distance so you can get a grasp of the patterns that are there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some water here as well if you can't, thank you. Can I borrow that?
The closer I get to it, the least I can see of it.
The least you can see of it.
Which makes it even worse.
Yeah.
Oh, does he?
And I'm not an artist. I've never was any good at art, not even at school.
No.
Have you got your drink?
What was it that made you want to come to this class just to try something different?
Try something different for company, just to get out.
Yeah.
Because I'm on my own and if not, you're stuck in.
I'm just going to go next to Shirley and she's going to be.
I've found that people who don't know you sort of withdraw from you.
There's some water there as well.
When they know you can't see properly.
Yeah.
I don't really know what it is about them.
Maybe like, as if they don't know how to act or what the right thing to say is.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. They don't know what to say to you. But I've got some good friends who I go out with.
Yeah.
Well, I've got one very good friend because she does go shopping with me. And you know, she's ever so good.
Yeah.
And I never thought I'd ever lose my sight.
No.
I was a great reader, and that's what I miss most of all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Picking up a book, crowding up in a corner.
Yeah. It's holding the physical book, isn't it? That's.
And I can't read it. I can't even read big print now.
No. Do you ever use the talking books at all at the minute?
Yes.
You've got the gold one now, have you?
I send away from them.
Yeah.
To the blind people.
Yeah.
For them. But it's not the same as
holding.
Getting in a corner on your own.
Yeah.
With a book.
Yeah.
And let the world go past.
Yeah. I suppose in some ways art kind of gives that back a little bit for you to go into your own world for a moment.
Yes.
And just do it, yeah.
I'm no good at art, I'll admit it. I never was.
And if you'd like to find out more about that group, or indeed any other classes like that, then you might want to search for My Sight Nottingham on Google or on other search engines. That is it from me. Thank you so much for being here once again for the Weekly Connect. If you have a view on anything you've heard on the programme, we do literally discuss anything you want to talk about. So if you've got a view, get in touch with us. The email address is theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. When it's Mondays at 1, it's The Weekly Connect. Thank you so much for listening.